This is another segment in our Great Investor Series, and I'm very happy to welcome back Monish Pabrai as my guest today. Monish began his investing career in 1999 after he sold his business, and then he discovered and studied the work of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. And by his own admission, he says he's been pilfering their ideas ever since. Monish and his good friend Guy Spier got to sit down with Buffett for an afternoon with Warren Buffett after winning the charity lunch in 2007. And finally, to add to Monish's cred as a manager, his investment fund has crushed the return of the S&P 500 by over 1,100% in the past 16 to 17 years. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Monish.
Well, Steve, it's great to be back, and I love your show.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, it's great to see you at the Berkshire Conference in May, although we have to get up pretty ridiculously early to get some decent seats. What did you think of the conference?
Well, this year actually was my 20th year attending, and I've been every year, so it was 20 years in a row. And every year, you know, even though I think that, you know, kind of the scripture and Bible, if you will, is known well, every year I find myself learning something. And also then the second bigger purpose the meeting serves is just reinforcing core principles. And so this was great. This was another great year of having that.
Yeah. Was there anything that pops out as particularly special or different this year for you?
Well, I very much enjoyed the discussion they had around Google and Amazon, and also the discussion around the top four market cap stocks in the U.S., which are Facebook, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. And those four make up nearly something like 10% of the total market cap of all U.S. stocks, if you will.
Well, that has implications in itself, right?
That's right. And quite frankly, it's from the way these companies are going and doing, it may not be that any of them are in bubble S territory.
Really? Because they're growing so fast.
Well, they have very dominant positions and they have very robust cash flows. And in some cases, like Apple, they're at a very modest multiple.
Yeah. And with all that cash and all of that influence, they can really push their way around and kind of own the industry. And that's kind of a moat, you know, this idea of having some kind of protection or business protection around you. Would you say that those companies, I mean, we're talking about technology companies here, actually have a strong protective moat around them?
Yeah, I mean, I think normally tech businesses, you know, you can say they're kind of subject to disruptive innovation, but these are companies which are really kind of part of, let's say, habit changes in humans. So, you know, when we buy things at Amazon or when we search for things on Google, and, you know, just the Apple TV and me buying, you know, movies on Apple TV and such, you know, those are more consumer type businesses where the brands and the habit formations that take place amongst consumers can be far more resilient than the underlying technology. And so I think that gives these businesses some legs versus just a pure tech business.
What really fascinated me was his admission and his regret of not having invested in Amazon. I mean, as investors, I think every investor has some regrets. No matter how small the investor you are, the big one you missed, the big fish that got away. But to hear someone like Buffett, who's accumulated and amassed so much wealth, to have such strong regrets about misunderstanding Jeff Bezos and the kind of talent that he had, and in a sense, missing Amazon as an investment, I thought that really struck me very oddly.
Yeah, and also I think he wasn't so much in agony about Amazon as he was about Google, because he said the Google guys actually both came to see him before the IPO.
Yeah.
And they wanted help in, they actually wanted to plagiarize some of his owner's manual and letters to partners and so on. And even before the IPO, Berkshire through Geico was a big customer of Google with AdWords and such. So Berkshire could see very clearly the power of that model, and he was very aware of it, and Charlie Munger was very aware of it, and so the economics of that were very apparent to them, and they had private audience with the founders and such. So all the data that they wanted was available to them. And that one, I think he regrets more. I think Amazon is a difficult one for most of us because the multiple always looks so high.
Yeah, because they not hide their earnings, but they reinvest their earnings.
That's right.
So you don't really see any return. Okay, so let me switch gears here. You know, I'm an investment advisor, and I would say that practically everybody who comes into my office is nervous about their stock investments. You know, although the market is hitting new highs, the general feeling is that somehow this isn't real, that it's all just smoke and mirrors, and it's going to come tumbling down any minute. What are your thoughts about where we are in the stock market? Is it justified? Are these higher prices justified?
Well, I mean, I think when I look at the U.S. market, I would say that I don't see it as being overpriced, but it's possibly fully priced. And the only caveat there is that if our low interest rates persist for some extended period, then markets would actually currently be underpriced.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really hard to know kind of where interest rates are 5 years from now or 10 years from now. But if we could know that interest rates 5 years from now will be similar to where they are today or 10 years from now, then stocks are a bargain. And so I think the best advice is that it is not a bad thing to own fractions of great U.S. businesses, and it's not a bad thing to own them through some type of broad index fund with low costs and such. And the key thing is to not panic when markets go down. But, you know, if you're in your 30s, 40s, or 50s, you know, and your dollar cost averaging some small portion of your income, that's a great way to go.
Well, I think Charlie Munger said that really the best way to become rich is to spend less than you earn, save the difference, put it in index funds, and just kind of keep dollar cost averaging year after year. And after 20, 30, 40 years, it's inevitable that you will be rich. Do you subscribe to that?
Yeah, and how simple is that?
I know.
And then the reality is we end up with very few people who are actually rich.
Yeah.
And lots of people who, over their lifetime, have had tremendous earnings.
Yeah.
Because these simple rules won't get followed. Something that's simple is not always easy.
Well, this is the thing. You know, it's one thing to say that the best bargains or the best buys are available when the markets are in their worst periods, but it's a psychological characteristic to be able to buy when the whole world is telling you to sell. How does a good manager, how does a person counteract those natural feelings?
Well, I think the best way to do that is to not overthink it, put it on autopilot, you know, max your 401k with the employer match. If that's not there, then max the amount that can go into your IRAs and such, and whatever you can save after tax. And then just have a automated system where your savings keep going into one, two, or three broad indices and ignore the noise, you know, ignore the ups and downs, and you'll come out okay on the other end.
Yeah, yeah. My guest is Monish Prabhai. As I said, he's a hedge fund manager who has a proven track record of really trouncing the S&P 500. And basically, Monish, you came out of selling a business successfully, reinvesting that money and losing a lot of money in the next business. And then you came out and said, you know what, let me do it like Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger does it. Stay tuned for part two of my interview with Monish Prabhai later in the show.